Good morning. It's 8 past the hour, and you are listening to the Faith Radio Network. Well, my guest this half hour is Dr. Bruce Ashford. He's the provost and professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary and co-author of the book One Nation Under God, A Christian Hope for American Politics. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you, Doctor. Good to be on the show.
So President Trump has received a tremendous amount of criticism for his executive order banning refugees, banning travelers from several countries from entering the U.S. What is your perspective on this? Do you think it's an appropriate way to keep potential terrorists out of our country, or do you see it as overreach by the Trump administration?
Yeah, so let me give complicated issue. I would not have done it the way he did it. But let me say, on the one hand, on the other hand, so we've got sort of two competing priorities. We've got to balance and not give illegitimate weight to either, and those are love for our near neighbor and love for our far neighbor. Love for our near neighbor is our families, our neighborhoods, and our cities, and we've got to protect them. And there is a real threat from some of these countries that ISIS or other actors will twist our hospitality toward their own ends. On the other hand, love for our far neighbor says, and there's just tons of evidence from Scripture that we should extend a hand of friendship and support to people who are fleeing to protect their lives. Okay, so refugees are different than immigrants. They're not coming to get a better life. They're coming to keep their life. So in terms of the way Trump enacted things, apparently he did not consult adequately with Department of Homeland Security, Justice Department, State Department, National Security Council. The thing was badly written. They're having to backtrack, clarify. So I think there should have been more time put into it. And I would agree with what Russell Moore wrote in Washington Post. And he urged Trump to consult with our security people next time more thoroughly and to try to quickly resolve problems surrounding refugees who have green cards, Iraqi military interpreters who helped our soldiers, these sorts of people, and then go ahead and put into place a vetting process so that we can start receiving refugees again. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think that's a very balanced approach, Bruce. I appreciate that. One of the things that's interesting, we've been talking about the refugee issue earlier this week, and we talked to Matthew Sorens from World Relief, and he was saying, well, there has never been any type of death attributed to a refugee in this country, someone who has come to, ostensibly escape from persecution. And then we talked to Dr. David Aikman, a world affairs expert, and he said, well, actually in Europe, many of the terrorist acts that have been perpetrated were perpetrated by individuals who claimed to be or came as refugees into Europe, and that ISIS has even said that one of their goals is to basically sneak ISIS operatives into Western nations as refugees. So that even further complicates the issue, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, I think both perspectives are right. In Europe, Islam really is the lurking question that Westerners cannot solve. People on the left are going to tend, this is generalization, but are going to tend to have an optimism about the human spirit, that if we just extend a hand of friendship to Muslim countries, if we just stop saying that Islam is slanted toward violence, then Muslims are going to respond as a whole by stopping the terror. I think that's naive. I think the heart is evil. I think to the extent that Muslims go back to their original documents in the life of Muhammad, there's going to be violence. I mean, there is an inexorable drive in the Quran that gets more intense as Muhammad gets older to make the whole world submit to Muhammad, and if need be, by sword. So that's one side of it. How do we deal with Islam? And Europe is the one really having to deal with that, and the U.S. really hasn't had to deal with it except for 9/11 to a great extent. Then on the other side of it, I don't think we need to be ham-fisted, in our treatment of refugees and immigrants and just, rule out immigration from seven countries without having done our homework and put the proper vetting into place and so forth.
Yeah, it did seem like it was kind of shot out of a cannon with a lot of, as you said, consultation or forethought. And again, President Trump was keeping his campaign promises. And so we have to give them credit for that following through. But perhaps it could have been because there were a lot of agencies. We saw that just over the last 3 days, very confused on how they're supposed to implement this, and people getting detained that maybe shouldn't have been, and then they were released. And you certainly hate to be one of those individuals or have a family member in that situation. There are some Christian leaders, you mentioned Russell Moore, who have expressed concern about Trump's action concerning refugees. Do you think this action could cause him to lose the support of some evangelicals?
Yes. My sense of it, and I don't have, the latest up-to-date polls to prove it. I'm just giving an opinion here. But I tend to think the people who support Trump tend to want a really hard line drawn on refugees and immigrants. I doubt he's going to lose a lot of support, and he's doing what he promised to do here. So this is in line with what he promised to do before he was elected. I don't think he's going to lose a lot of support. I think this will increase the anger of people who are already against him. I don't think what he's done here is egregious. I would have done it differently. For sure. And I just actually posted an article on my website this morning, bruceashford.net, that answered 6 questions about the refugee crisis. But I don't think he'll lose a lot of support.
Our guest is Dr. Bruce Ashford. Bruce is the provost and professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's co-author of the book One Nation Under God, A Christian Hope for American Politics. By the way, if you've got a question for Bruce, you can call us 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. 93 Faith. We'll take a quick break and be right back here at Faith Radio. Welcome back. It's 17 past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. Bill Meyer with Bruce Ashford from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. We were unpacking some of the controversy around President Trump's executive order on immigration and refugees. And Bruce, it's pretty clear that the president's actions have galvanized those who were already anti-Trump. I know you and your colleague Michael Graham have been looking at some of the cultural and political divisions in this country. You wrote a very thoughtful piece on that. In addition to, some of the divisions that we were very clear on, the political, ideological divisions, the racial divisions, economic divisions that our nation is grappling with, you take a look at 3 other divisions, and would love to spend a minute or two unpacking each of those. And the first is something I think all of us intuitively know, but maybe don't give a lot of thought to, and that's the rural versus cosmopolitan division in this country. Can you explain how that gap has widened in recent years?
Yeah, just to speak personally here, this division surprised me, but it shouldn't have. I grew up rural, very rural, a town with about 800 people. I worked on a farm. When we began to see this divide during the 2016 election cycle, it surprised me, but then it seemed very familiar. And so I think this divide is mainly among whites, not exclusive, but mainly among whites. And you've got a number of white rural Americans who feel that identity politics has been very unfair to them, and that black or brown Americans, identity politics has helped them, but for white Americans it hasn't. And they think that they're looked down upon as backwards, uncultured, uneducated, and in Hillary's terms, deplorable. And they like President Trump because he gave them a voice. Then on the other hand, you have cosmopolitans. And these are people who tend to cluster in urban and suburban areas. They are comfortable with diversity. Diversity helps them. It gives them great, food, and help around their house. Immigration does, and this sort of thing. And so the liberal cosmopolitans want these red states to get on board with gay marriage, transgender bathrooms, multiculturalism. Conservative cosmopolitans want them to get on board with globalization, international free trade, relaxed immigration laws. This is a deep, deep divide. It's not going away.
Now, another one you mentioned, you talk about the fact that there is this, and you alluded to that just now, this nationalist versus global division. Flesh that out for us.
Yeah, so there's a couple of different types of nationalism. There is sort of political nationalism and economic nationalism. Political nationalism is when you elevate the nation to the level of a deity or a god, and then you're willing to use violence against those who would want to change your nation culturally. I'm not talking about that as much right now. I'm more talking about an economic nationalism. where you have folks who say, listen, globalization has been a bad dream for us. You might get, you know, good Chinese food because of immigration, but what I get is somebody who takes my job and puts my restaurant out of business. Economically. Culturally, nationalists are going to say, hey, you know, I remember when I grew up and my nation had a culture that I understood that fit me and who I am. But now that we've let everyone in the world in our borders, I don't even recognize my own nation anymore. On the other hand, are globalists who say, listen, you can't control globalization. You can isolate yourself if you want to, but it's going to be to your detriment economically. And culturally, you know, culture is going to change anyway. It always does, always has, and always will. This is a pretty deep divide, and it's very similar to the rural cosmopolitan, because usually the rural end up nationalist and the cosmopolitan end up globalist. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And a great way to flesh that out. Finally, you say there's a divide in our country between what you call the warriors versus the cultivators, and you're mainly talking about in the evangelical community. Define those two labels for us.
Yeah, so I think there are a broader analogy in the culture at wide, but what I understand pretty well is evangelicals. And I think these categories are not precise, and you know, one person could actually at different times in their life fit in both categories, or even in one moment fit in both categories. But you have people who tend to be culture warriors, and they're going to tend to view Christianity's relationship to the broader social and cultural context is war and maybe nothing but war. And the tendency in order to fight this bad society and culture out there is to win, is to use short-term political activism to win elections and pull top-down levers of influence. Culture cultivators are going to say, you know, those top-down levers and that short-term activism in the end hurts your witness. We're comfortable being a minority and not pulling those top-down levers if it goes, you know, against what we think we ought to do. And we're comfortable working for change from the bottom up. Now, my two categories are generalizations, and they're pretty broad, but I think there's something there.
So what's the solution to bridging these divides and some of the other issues that are causing this huge rift in our nation right now, Bruce?
Yeah, so, you know, our motto is E Pluribus Unum. You know, out of the many, one. And I think right now the division that we have in our nation is making a mockery of that. I think the whole world, you know, can see the sort of irony there. So the first thing is we have to find common ground and work from there. I think we're ignoring the common ground. We're ignoring it. There's lots of it. There's plenty of common ground. And you start there and you work from there. But there are two Christian virtues in addition to the common ground. And the first is love. Love your neighbors yourself. Love means that we listen attentively to people with whom we disagree, that we refuse to demean and degrade them, as we tend to do. Anyone who's across the aisle politically, the radio talk show hosts and the cable news networks have taught us that what you're supposed to do is lie about these people, misrepresent them, view them as morally reprehensible people in whom nothing good can be found. Love demands that we don't do that, that we actually listen, that we reach a hand across the aisle. Then the next virtue is wisdom. Wisdom is different than knowledge. Knowledge is just knowing facts. Wisdom is knowing what to do with those facts, how to weigh the alternatives, in some instances to make a compromise. If you don't have compromise, you don't have politics. If you're not willing to ever broker compromises, then what you're going to end up with is a totalitarian regime. And so there are many times when we have to compromise on policy issues, and then there are some times when we don't compromise, when we draw a line in the sand, and wisdom is what lets us know the difference.
Great thoughts. Let me steer you towards BruceAshford.net to read this great article on the divides in our country, some of which, you may not have thought about, and then how we can heal our divides. And then, of course, Bruce just mentioned he just posted a brand new article on six different questions that we should be asking about this whole issue involving refugees and immigration and the president's executive order. So, Bruce, thanks again for your thoughts. As always, you make us think, and have a great week with your students.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's been a joy.